All right, it is the second. Okay. Now that we've all determined that, no, I don't teach the New York rule. I hate that. I don't know, is that still in the evaluation forms?
It's not applicable.
Yeah, okay, good. Because I don't, you know, if there were one, I'd share it with you, I promise.
Sorry.
Next week, our last series of classes before the break, we will be doing our negotiation exercises. The way this is going to work, and I'll talk more about negotiation generally in a few minutes, but the way this is going to work is you will once again break into your, I think we have, what, four quasi-law firms. You will be based on the fact pattern that we did the markup for. There may be some additional facts. You will be negotiating against either an outside lawyer or me playing an outside lawyer, representing the other side, representing Hipster, etc. And this is going to be as realistic as we can do this. So you will go in requesting changes, requesting language, requesting whatever your client needs, and you're going to get pushback. And there will be counter arguments.
Did that just shut off?
There will be counter arguments. There may be acceptance. We will try to make this as real world as it can, given that each of your teams will likely have only about, just trying to think about this. Here's the problem. I don't know that I will be able to get all right, we'll do it the way I thought. Okay. Each of your teams will have about a half an hour. So, again, very compressed, focusing on the key issues. Don't expect to get through everything. Each of your negotiations will be video recorded. And then what I intend to do the following class is go over, not obviously all 2 hours worth, but give you a general sense and then show highlights. Or not quite so highlights, but elements that that show certain things. Now, four teams, half hour each, two classes to do it in. So here's the way I figured this out. Last time I did this, it was 1 3-hour block. Or 2.5-hour block, and teams just sort of stood around if they weren't up, and once they'd done it, they could watch, which was kind of cool. Again, we're broken out into two classes. So, two of you will go on Monday, two of your teams, two of you will go on Wednesday, and I will not require you to attend if you are not going. Because you'd be, if we'd done it all one day, you'd be just hanging out and doing whatever. I might suggest, especially if you are of the teams that are going Wednesday, that you maybe decide to come in during this time that you don't have anything else scheduled on Monday, so you have some time to work out strategy. And I would suggest strongly that if you do go on Monday, that you do come on Wednesday and watch, having gone through your version to see, because you will learn from it. But I'm not looking to waste your time. So count them both as strong recommendations. I have here numbers 1, 2, 3, and 4. 1 and 2 on Monday, 3 and 4 on Wednesday. They are shuffled. However, one can shuffle 4 things. I have no idea what they are ordering. I will go counterclockwise.
I'm on lucky, not right.
Right? Are you your friend?
What is this?
The professor?
Wait.
I don't know if this is going to work because I know that I'm not going to be able to be here for my exam. I have the last number.
I will let you guys negotiate this.
We'll take Wednesday.
Okay, well, whatever.
Man, God, Wednesday, no.
Yeah,
it's pretty much anyway.
Well, okay. Let's
start the floor at $10.
Yeah, really.
It's good to negotiate.
For the TLC fund, we should auction it off.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so who's got one and two now?
I got two.
You got, you're Monday, you're Monday. You're Wednesday, and she'll be here?
Yeah, she'll be here.
Okay. Wednesday. Okay, good. All right. And I think we'll do it, since we're only going to be, last time I had to do it in two different locations, it was all complicated. We'll do it here. All right, so have any of you, well, I'm sure you've all negotiated with your parents, if nothing else, but have any of you had occasion to negotiate in a professional context? In what was the context?
Sponsors for our team.
Were you setting the terms or conveying the terms?
We were setting them, but we...
I mean, you personally. So your role in that negotiation?
Both. I've done both.
Okay. And you negotiated?
Yeah.
What context?
On both sides. License agreements.
All right, so we have a ringer in the room. A couple of ringers on the same... Okay. Fair enough. We just have to be more tougher on them, that's all. Anybody else on occasion in any professional context?
I don't know if it's professional per se, but it was like the ABA client counseling.
Oh, it was simulated.
Competition. Yeah, like
simulated. Okay, which is fine. Any unsimulated?
We were trying to get space in an artist alley, and we had to actually work out with everybody how people are going to fit and who would have what merchandise.
Okay. And again, we just saw a negotiation, a real-world negotiation. The whole idea, well, I get philosophical, and some of you have heard me be philosophical, so I'll try to compress it. Because we're talking about, this is an area, you know, when we talk about litigation, I can speak wonderfully in theory. But almost all the litigation I have viewed has been by actors on TV shows, the same as a lot of other people. My career has never been a litigation career. What I have done my entire career is contracts. And for the vast majority of that time, I was involved in negotiation. Okay, I was talking to Tony earlier. Unfortunately, I give the same class. Have we talked about this stuff yet, negotiation strategies? I didn't think we had. I haven't told you my career stories. Okay, I'm sorry. And you know, senior moment, at some point, I can't be the only person in the faculty who does this, teaches similar things multiple times during a semester. Sometimes I, what?
That's very good.
There are times that I have, and because it gets, you know, particularly with fall and then spring, it was only a few months ago. So, with a little peek behind the curtain, right? Sometimes I actually have to think, okay, which room was I in when I talked about this? I know I did this there. Okay. If I start repeating myself, somebody give me a high sign, please. Really, really. It's good to get to this after you filled out the thing. Right? Senile, okay. The fact... it's important. At the bottom, at the end of it, though, I think the most important decision that you have to make as lawyers, really in any context, but especially as lawyers, when what you are negotiating is not necessarily your issues, but your client's issues, where you were very integrally involved, and you were negotiating for yourself, or you and your colleagues, but you weren't representing someone else, it's different. Because when you're representing yourself, you're negotiating on your own behalf, you can't necessarily separate your needs, your emotions, your personal feelings from the situation. You can try, but you've got a lot personally at stake. What about your clients, though? You get to decide what kind of a negotiator you are going to be. Not, are you a good or a bad one? That's skill set. But what's your emotional tenor going to be? What's your approach going to be? And it is hugely important. Hugely important. Some people, when negotiating, some lawyers in particular, I like to call them the bulldog. And the story I tell, which showed me why I didn't think of being a bulldog was a good idea. This is where I'm starting to expect high signs. When I was a first semester law student, and I tell people, you can ask Professor Citron, he was there. We were first semester law students together. And we were in our contract small group. There were six, it was the way they worked. We had all four of our classes together, the 16 of us, with other 16 small groups. But our only class that was just us was contracts. And that was also where we did our legal writing exercises and everything else. So our professor assigned us, much like we're going to do next week, a contract negotiation simulation. We were assigned different roles. Here's the fact pattern. You know this. They don't know that. Go do a contract. And we all went off, I think, to Leslie Moore's apartment. She was in our small group. And we negotiated. We all were trying to get something. He has a much better memory than I do for exactly the fact that I just remember it had something to do with trash hauling and whatever it was. There was one guy in our small group. And whether it was because he was a freshly minted MBA before law school, or whether it was just his way of doing things, he decided he wasn't going to get in on anything. Anything. No matter what we tried, what we proposed, however, I want. And it was a homework assignment. At the end of the day, we had to come up with a contract. So we just, it was 3 a.m, whatever it was. Okay, fine, whatever, just go, do. And we handed it in, and that was it. But it stuck with me. It stuck with me because, especially as I went on in my career, I realized what would have happened in the real world. Because we were giving in on things we couldn't give in on. That our clients would not have been able to do. And so in the real world, we wouldn't have said yes. And in the real world, he would have gone back to his client, had he taken that attitude, said, I was there, I was so tough on your behalf, I was giving in to you, you know, I didn't give in on anything. The client would say, where's the contract? And he would say, we don't have a contract. They wouldn't sign it, but I didn't give in on anything. At which point the client would say, you're fired, and do you have those lawyers' numbers? Because I need a new lawyer who's actually willing to do something and make it move ahead. It stuck with me. Contracts can be win-win. That's the point. The point is that everybody gets enough of what they need. But too many lawyers I have negotiated against, too many lawyers, unfortunately, I have worked with and for, have decided that all contracts are contact sports. Win at all costs. The other person has to lose. Score points. Pick your favorite violent sports metaphor. And sometimes it succeeds in the sense that a contract is generated. And sometimes it doesn't. You know what happens always? It generates bad feelings. It generates bad feelings right at the moment where the parties are supposed to be most able to work together. And those lawyers, I think, rarely get referrals from opposing counsel. It happens otherwise. If you show yourself to be a good advocate for your client, but willing to work to get the deal done in a cooperative way, and the lawyer on the other side of the table has a conflict of interest for something, she's likely to refer business to you because she can see you're good. She's not going to worry about putting a prospective client with whom she might have some other relationship in your hands. That person will be represented well. The bulldogs, the nasty ones, they don't get referrals from other lawyers. Not to say you have to be a pushover on it. It's tough. You're playing a role. You are. Whatever you choose, you are choosing how you respond. Sometimes you're dealing with a bulldog. You're dealing with someone on the other side of the table who doesn't want to be reasonable. Has decided he doesn't have to be reasonable. And then you have to figure out what to do about it. So I'm going to ask you.
Are you bringing in a bulldog?
Let me say that at least one of the lawyers who came the last time took a... This lawyer was not quite a bulldog, but I think this lawyer took a stronger, more oppositional stance than this lawyer ordinarily does in practice, purposely, to teach something. I'm not guaranteeing anything. I'm not guaranteeing that I won't act the bulldog. But I'm telling you now, if I do it, it will be not because I want to show you how to do it, but how I want to show you how you might have to respond to it. Negotiation, part of it is you decide up front how you're going to approach it. Sometimes you have no leverage. I haven't told this class the leverage story yet, have I? Okay, again, high sign. Which was the services agreement I had to negotiate for an advertising agency. Really, haven't? I tell the story all the time. Okay.
I remember the lesson, but I didn't know which class.
Okay.
Well, now I'm...
No, fine. If you've heard it, fine. Then I've done this. Good. This is the package. It usually goes together. Just want to be sure that only the people I think heard it already. I swear. I think I've had too much coffee today. So here's real world story number two. Real world story number two. I was a mid-level associate. Third-ish, fourth-ish year, something like that. Maybe fifth. Our client was an advertising agency. Major advertising agency. One of its major clients was a technology company. Hundreds of millions of dollars worth of advertising placed through our client every year. Huge client. So when our client needed technology services that its clients offered, where are they going to go? You know, throw the business to its client. Make nice. They offer a good service. It's a legitimate company, actually a very well-regarded company. Why not choose them? Some goodwill. But the scope of the deal, you really need to understand. So what our client, earned from this technology company was like this. And what our client was going to pay this technology company was like this. The value of the deal was minuscule compared to the value of the profit our client got from this company, from its client. So you can imagine goodwill, good feelings, paramount. And to this day, I don't know whether I was given this to negotiate on my own. I don't think it was hazing because there was too much at stake. I'm not exactly sure why they gave it to me. Maybe they had great confidence in my ability. I'll choose to believe that. But here's how this went. We got the contract, the proposed agreement. It came from our client's client. So it was largely pro that. It wasn't terrible. It wasn't an unreasonable agreement. But there were things that, in the ordinary course of a services agreement, you want to change. You want to get better warranties, promises of certain performance. You want to get eliminate some of the limits on the service provider's liability. It was a technology communication service. You want certain promises about that it's going to be working all the time. It will have certain technical features. Something with a little contract, you know, the kinds of things you look at, even in a fairly reasonable contract, because it's your obligation to do so and because it would probably not unfair. And I marked it up very diligently, checked it with the client. Yeah, that seems reasonable. Went over to the client's offices to negotiate with the lawyer, I think an in-house lawyer from a technology company, and no exaggeration, this is how it went. Section 1.2, I said, we'd like to change this language to read this. No. Okay. Section 1.3, we would like to suggest adding this. No. Okay. Section 1.3, and that's how it went. I don't think we changed a comma. And at the end of the day, having given in on everything, I had done my job for the client. I explained, this is what we did, this is what the contract means, this is the risks you're facing, you decide. But leverage does matter. I'm not suggesting that you simply ignore issues of leverage, of bargaining power, of other things. You have a question? Oh, okay. Of other elements. Sometimes you will be negotiating a contract between two related parties or drafting a contract and there really isn't a negotiation, or if there is, it's all very friendly because everybody's pretty much on the same side. Sometimes you're negotiating a contract. I'm sorry. Sometimes you're negotiating a contract where, as with my deal, the contract itself is a drop in the bucket. But the implications for messing up the relationship are huge. There are all sorts of situations. And part of good negotiating is understanding the broader context. It's one of the reasons why I like being in-house. And my personal predilection, I like being, not only being part of a business in a more direct way, but the in-house lawyers usually have a better understanding of why they're doing what they're doing and how it fits in. If you just go in, and I remember just my first couple of contracts, technology contracts that I was just handed, and I had not sat in on any of these, and I was asking for things that were just totally unreasonable, because I didn't know better. I didn't understand the context. And I think the lawyers on the other side were nice to me, and they didn't just simply call me an idiot, which they might have been in it. But you have to understand, what is the relationship between your client and the other side? What's gone on before? What's likely to go on afterwards? How have the negotiations gone? How important is this deal to your client? Is it very important? Is it not so important? You need to know. But all of that gets filtered through your overall philosophy, your overall choice of your approach. The Bulldogs will treat everything like a fight. And they'll fight even more nastily, right? Or less nastily, but they'll fight everything. People who are more collaborative, who are looking for the win-win, they're not necessarily always going to be giving in, but they'll be trying. They'll be trying to work with and not against. You get to choose. You get to choose in class. You get to choose in life. You have to make that choice, though. You do. Because you need to know what you're going to do. So that's the kind of general context. And my hope, my strong advocacy, is that you choose the collaborative model. You reject the bulldog as an overall approach. You still have to represent your client. You still have to protect your client's interests. You still have to dig in your heels when the person on the other side is making unreasonable requests. Sometimes you're faced with a situation where you make a reasonable suggestion. The people on the other side agree it's a reasonable suggestion. It's doable, it's entirely appropriate, and they still have to say no, sometimes apologetically. And then all you can do is assess the risk. Early on in the web development context, the very first web development agreements I was working on, we were representing the customer. We were going to a web development shop. It was not a particularly complicated website. There was no real programming involved. It was pages, pictures, text, very straightforward. But the agreement we got, very relevant here in the licensing context, the agreement we got said that our client would receive a license for the object code of its website. And I knew, and the people we were talking to, the business people actually knew, there was no object code for this website. Object code is for standalone software that gets compiled. That's not what this was. And so I said, you know, this provision that you're requesting, it doesn't make sense, right? I'm not, they said, no, you're right. You're right. I was dealing actually with the business people. You're right. I said, okay, so we'll take it out and replace it, right? No, because our lawyers insist on putting it there because they didn't understand. I had to go to my client and say, you're signing a contract, just understand, client, you're going to sign a contract that doesn't say what we're actually doing. Just, you need to know this. If you need to turn to this contract for relief, it's not going to be there. And at the end of the day, the stakes were low enough, they signed it. You can't always control. You can't always control whether you've got somebody unreasonable, somebody uninformed on the other side. So what do you do? How do you then take whatever decisions you make and turn them into practice? What will you be doing in simulation next week? So we're going to start from the same place, in a sense. Fact pattern. Your clients will be certain kinds of businesses, and I would strongly recommend that those of you who chose pure retailers might want to change your fact patterns enough to give you some need to license, because that's really the context we're talking about. Scope of the license, duration of the license, termination of the license, all the things that really don't happen in retail. So you're going to decide what your needs are. Similar fact pattern. I'm going to give you all, see if it's going to be the same agreement or maybe a slightly revised agreement. Either way. And you're going to come in, and rather than simply marking it up, you know, you will have already marked it up. And that's one thing you really need to do collectively going into next week. Have your markup. Not to hand over necessarily, but set, not only say we don't like this language, but here's what we would replace it with. Because a negotiation, unlike simply marking an agreement and handing it over, a negotiation, you are going, you have to deal with the concepts and then be prepared with language. So let's say it's an indemnification, it's a warranty. And you want to add a warranty about intellectual property. So you need to know conceptually what you want. What kind of intellectual property warranty? You want a warranty that there will be, that they're going to warrant that there's no infringement of any copyright, trademark, patent, trade secret, in anything that they're providing to you. You don't have to have the exact wording. You have to describe it effectively. And the lawyer may say, well, you know, we're not really willing to do that. What's the obvious next thing you do?
You're going to, would you be willing to indemnify us?
Before you do that,
hold us harmless.
Before you do that, maybe that's one thing, but shouldn't you ask why? That's the difference between them. That's another difference between just simply marking it up and negotiating. You have an opportunity to ask why. Why won't you do this? We won't do it because we don't do that. That's not. If you really can't get off the, this is how we do things, that's like, you know, all right, we're not getting this changed. And then you have to make calculus. How risky? And maybe you say, okay, you're not going to give me a warranty. Will you at least, since you're in a better position, and this is something that I have found to work, because it's just simply true, that as between my client, your client, your client's in a better position to reduce this risk. So we don't want to be on the hook for a risk we can't control. Would you at least be willing to indemnify us if we get sued because you infringed? That's a secondary, right? An indemnity without the warranty, you have to make sure the language is there. But before that, ask why. Why won't you do this reasonable thing? And you also get an opportunity to say, here's why we're asking for this reasonable thing. Yeah, because you've got control over the IP. We don't. You know where it's coming from. We don't. And by the way, we'll be very reasonable. We'll give you the same thing. We'll give you the same provision. Anything we're putting into the mix that you might be on the hook for, we'll stand up for. That's something you could say. If you're talking about our context, this particular distribution deal, where your customers are getting, you're giving your customers somebody else's game, there are going to be some concerns there. So many of you in your markup enhanced the testing. So you're going to say, we would like to have the opportunity to test and reject. And the obvious question from the other side is going to be, why? All you're doing is distributing. This is our, you know, we'll handle it. You need to be able to have an argument, that something to respond to their why question. That's what this is about. There are other aspects to this that I really want to make sure you consider. And that, those also have to do with leverage. Because negotiations are give and take. And it is, even if you are not the bulldog, even if you're not the fighter, it's absolutely appropriate and probably, I would say, I don't say ethically required, but ethically recommended, that if you do give in on behalf of your client to thing A, you're more than entitled to remind the other lawyer when it comes time to talk about B. You've either accepted a proposal that was not really where you wanted to go, or you've made a proposal that is rejected, and you weigh and measure the tone, right? And you say, okay, all right, let's move on from now. Let's move on. So you get to B. Say, well, you know, here's what we want for B, and we were really reasonable when it came to A. And we recognize your issue. Can you work with us on this? Nothing wrong. And everything right. Reminding the other lawyer, hey, we gave, we can give to. You might still get a no. But I get a yes. And you can often give in on things that don't matter to you. And use them still. Say, well, we gave in on that. Smart lawyer on the other side said, yeah, you gave in on that. It didn't matter. If they don't quite figure that one out, you say, we gave in on that. Would you work with us on that? You're going to have to decide. One of the challenges of this particular exercise is you're not solo. You're going to have to decide, because one of the reasons I'm recording this is I want to make sure that every single one of you is participating. Right? If only one of you is speaking for your group, that doesn't necessarily show me that any of the others of you are learning something about negotiating. So you need to be prepared. Maybe you divide it up by sections. Maybe you divide it up by expertise. Maybe you have a random number generator and you know which one of you goes first. Whatever it is, I want you all to be engaged in this exercise. Don't forget that. It's a little hard in the simulation context. But another thing that this, my own simulation experience brought home to me, and which practice has certainly brought home to me, is that there are certain things that your client cannot do. There are certain things that your client may not do, right? Certain things that are simply technically, financially, structurally impossible. There are certain things that are prohibited. And there are certain things that your client just really doesn't want to do. And you need to know those things in the real world, certainly. Because you don't want to go and you put yourself in a situation where, in the interest of collaboration, or because you get a reasonable sounding proposal, you say yes to something your client cannot do, may not do, or would cost a lot of money for it to do. I'll give an example. Frequent examples where this plays out. One is payment terms. How payments are made, how often payments are made. So frequently, one of the discussions in a contract is how much time between the invoice, between the bill, and the bill getting paid. And obviously, whichever party is generating the bill, asking to get paid, wants to get paid very quickly. You know, you will pay us 15 days before we give you the invoice, ideally, but that's not realistic. So one side says, you know, you get an invoice and you'll pay us, that invoice will get paid within 5 business days. 10 business days, whatever. Might sound reasonable. But you need to know what your client's CFO does about billing. How often do invoices get paid? Are they collected? Are they paid monthly? Are they paid weekly? What's going on? How does the bookkeeper work at your client? Because it may be perfectly reasonable for the other party to say, we'd like to get paid net 15. We'd like to get paid 15 days after you get the invoice. But if your client generates checks on the 10th day of the month after the invoices all get received, right, through a month, and then the 10th day into the next month, checks go out. You would darn well better be sure that that gets itself into the contract, because otherwise, you could find yourself having to explain to your client that in order not to breach the agreement, your client has to come up with an entirely new method of bookkeeping, method of accounting, method of check writing for one deal, one client. That's totally different from every other thing that it does. And may need to hire different staff or whatever. It may cost more than the deal. So you need to know how your client does things. Not just in payment, but, okay, so again, going back to our actual deal. Let's say that you want discs. Whatever you decide your company is, your client's company is, you want Hipster to provide you with actual discs. You need to make sure, right, that when you're asking this, what if Hipster can't? It doesn't have a deal because it's a startup company from a financial services business. They don't have a relationship with a disc manufacturer. You need to be ready. First of all, you need to understand that if you're asking for it and they say no, you need to figure out the why. And you need to have a contingency plan. Okay, how do we get what my client needs given what your client can do? Sometimes, like I said, it may be not just a cannot, but a may not. Often that's an accounting issue, and if I misspeak, any of you who might have accounting backgrounds. But there are certain kinds of revenue where there's different kinds of bookkeeping. What I mean by that is sometimes a company is permitted to say, okay, let's say we struck a deal on December 30th. But in fact, what we're going to do is not actually going to happen until January 15th. Depending on the particular accounting rules, that income may be booked to December 30th, right? It may say appropriate, the contract is signed, you're allowed to recognize the revenue as of December 30th. Sometimes you're not allowed to recognize the revenue until it's paid. There are all sorts of rules, and I'm not saying we have to know all of that. There are other courses, you know. Take Professor Subotnick for tax, he'll tell you all these good things. But I know I've had situations in practice where, particularly when we were trying to license software, and it was getting towards the end of a period, a quarter, right? And we wanted a little delay in when we were going to pay for it. And we've gone past the quarter. And as much as the licensing, you know, the software vendor was willing to work with us, they weren't permitted to because they needed to book the business here. And if they extended it, it would have messed up their accounting. They would not have been able, because they were giving us, they were giving us a discount if we signed the deal now, but if the way we were asking for it pushed it into the middle of the next month, they wouldn't get the benefit, the accounting benefit, of signing the deal now. And so they said, you can't have it both ways because we're not allowed to recognize the revenue for now if we do what you want us to do. There are rules, sometimes there are laws, certain kinds of things. We saw even, for example, we saw in, when we looked at the sample licensing provisions towards the beginning of the semester. Do you remember there were countries where certain exports were prohibited? Libya, Cuba, I think, was on that list, right? Certain places where this technology was not allowed to go. So you need to know if your client is facing some of those limitations. If your software is not allowed to go someplace, or if your business is in those places and you're trying to get software, you need to understand what the law is before you propose. And if they ask you for something you're not allowed to do, you have to say, we'd love to work with you, but we're just not allowed.
So, funny story of what happens if you go about it anyway. The government reads your face of business. You get a gunpoint at you, and you get dragged into a little office as they raid your file.
This doesn't sound like a hypothetical.
No.
Are you permitted to tell a little bit more now that you've whetted our appetite?
Absolutely. I work for a small company that manufactures medical diagnostic pipetting machines. And theoretically could be used to manufacture some type of biochemical or whatever.
Bad stuff?
Yeah, that's. It's mostly used for medical diagnostics and health. But the owner circumvented the embargoes or export restrictions by using strawmen, such as like, you know, Emirates or whatever the case may be, to ship to Cuba, Iran, and other.
All those nice little interdicted countries.
Yeah. And so a bunch of black trucks showed up and walking up my desk with my headphones. I turn over and there's a big gun pointing at me. He's like, everyone needs to go into a little room.
Like, okay, I'm going to take my headphones off.
It's like, what is going on?
I'm putting them down. See, here are my hands. I hope that's the only time you've ever been held at gunpoint.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good.
Hopefully less.
So I would imagine then that if you are negotiating a deal, right, and if you're working with, you're representing someone who's exporting and you know about these rules, you're going to be damn well sure to specify that neither they nor any agent of theirs, right, is permitted, and they will indemnify you and hold you harmless and take the bullet for you if in fact they do this sort of thing. See, it's not just hypothetical, there are guns involved. How long after that did you stay at that job?
Another 6 or 7 months. But
how long after that did you start looking for another job?
I was looking for that. It's one of those businesses.
See? It's true. Bad stuff does happen if you don't get this stuff right.
Yes, it's the right letters to the judge to tell them why we need him. Keep running the business. I don't think anyone said okay.
Dear judge, I am writing this letter because my boss asked me to write to you to tell you why he thinks we need him. He thinks that he is indispensable. Signed Epstein's mother. Okay. So you have to decide who you are. You have to know what you need. You have to know what your client needs, what it can give. Sometimes it can't give something because it doesn't have it. If it's being asked to provide something as part of a sub-license, but it doesn't have the super license, the master license, right. So, you know, Netflix is doing a deal, and it doesn't have the rights to distribute the movies outside of the United States, so it may not do a deal with another country if it doesn't have the rights to share. So you need to understand what's behind. So if you're, for example, again, back to this deal, you're representing the distributor, and Hipster says to you, well, we want to know the email address of every customer who gets our disc from you. We want you to provide us with the customer's names and email addresses. It's not an unreasonable request from Hipster, but you need to know, okay, what does our privacy policy say? What do we tell our customers about how and when we might or might not share their contact information? And so if Hipster comes to you and says, we want your client to give us these email addresses, your response may have to be, we're sure you do. But understand, our privacy policy prohibits this So let's think about how we can get you, that's where you turn around and say, why? What do you want to do with them? Oh, we'd like to market to them. Other games that we have. So, okay, so that's our, there's our hypothetical. They've asked, you're not allowed. They said we want to market. Anybody have an idea what you could propose instead?
Hipster can distribute the marketing material to them.
To whom?
To the customers.
But, well, if they do sign up. But Hipster wants to market to your clients' customers.
Oh, then I would say if Hipster provide me with the approved materials, and I'll disseminate it through email blast.
Right. You're not allowed to share the email addresses, but you might be able to email your customers with Hipster's offer. And not only that, you can say, well, you know, what do we get out of that? We're happy to do that with you, but maybe we'll get a percentage of that too. We'll share some revenue. Thinking creatively. You come up with a position, it's rejected. Ask why. You might get the three-year-old, either, you know, I should say, you might get the unreasonable parents because I said so. You might get the, I don't have authority from my client to do that. Now, that might be true. That might be true. But one of the other things you can do in a negotiation, and I think I wanted to make sure I mentioned this, you can put it back. You could say to them, they say, well, we don't really have, you know, I don't have the authority to my client. Nothing wrong, and lots of things right with saying, tell you what, let's get through the rest of it. Can you please ask your client? Go back to your client. I know you don't have the authority, but here's the proposal. Take it back to your client. And if it's that, you know, depending on the role of the lawyer, the lawyer may say, okay, that's fine, we'll get back to you. You don't have to handle everything. Sometimes you can't. Sometimes they'll say to you, are you willing to do this instead? And you have to, the stipulation is tough, but you may have to say, I don't know. I didn't discuss that with my client. I'm going to have to go back to my client and find out. We'll get back to you on that. Sometimes you'll ask for something and they'll say, well, didn't the business people work this stuff out already? And you'll look at your notes, and the other lawyer will look at her notes and say, I don't think they worked this out yet. So you could either work it out yourselves. Yeah?
Will the other side be requesting any changes, or are we assuming that they prepared with the agreement, so they're not going to ask for any changes?
The context is it's their agreement. So they are at least theoretically comfortable with the provisions as they are. Now, there may be other factors there will most certainly be other factors behind the scenes about their client that you don't know. But yeah, they're not going to be asking for, you're not marking it up and giving it to them. This is their agreement, and you're going to try to negotiate changes to it.
In terms of the information that we're on the exhibits that we don't know about, for example, the compensation, are we gonna somehow get that information? Or no?
Either you'll get it, or it will be, you know, we need to go back and figure this out. Hey, your client didn't put this in, right? So if it's not there in the version that I give you, then one of the things you probably should do sooner rather than later is say, where is the compensation? It'd be interesting to see what the response is going to be. So, yeah.
And did you say this is going to be a new agreement being sent to us, or it's the one we marked on?
I'm going to think about that. It's going to be similar. I'm not sure yet. I have to think about how I want to do it, the people I have coming in, the fact pattern. It will be much the same, if not exactly the same. It will probably be the same, and I'll get it down to you in the next couple of days. But let's work on the assumption that it will be the same agreement, because that's what makes sense. But you have more time now to think about the markup than you did, or you're changing your fact pattern and then you can go ahead. You probably do want to mark it up, but you're not going to be handing over that markup. it's going to be a useful thing for you to have to inform your discussions. So, last thing, I would like to strongly recommend that you dress the part. I know I'm asking a lot, and it may be more difficult for some of you, depending on from where you come, and I'm thinking it's not. But A, especially if we have people coming in from the outside, shows them respect, they're taking the time to do this. And B, it does sort of help your professional, you know, if you're feeling the part, it can be easier to sort of play that part. Take this seriously. Don't do it like the guy in my small group. Do this with the mindset that you're going to have to talk to your client the next morning. And your client needs this deal. And you don't want to be the one to have to say, I was tough, but we didn't get it done. If you don't get it done, you want to make sure it's the other person's fault. Any other questions, thoughts, comments? Yeah.
When will you decide
using
this agreement?
I think we're going to be using, let's just simplify matters. We'll use this agreement. The agreement that I gave you, it will be the same agreement. So work with that because it's just better. You're already familiar with it. You've thought it through. But we're now taking it to that next level because you're really looking at, we've now been over it. So you have a better sense of what it means. What the issues might be, but also remember, put yourself in the shoes of the other side as much as you know to anticipate what the objections to your proposals might be, to decide how reasonable or how much you're going to push on these proposals, etc. I'm available for emailed questions, whatever. As I say, first two groups, Monday night, hopefully you will all be here.